Sup, freaks, it's your boy Marty here to introduce this rip of rabbit hole recap. This episode was brought to you by our good friend. Good friend. Is the company a friend? Is a company a person? Is a corporation a person? Legally, in the U.S., I believe they're they're designated as people. So that our good friend Unchained Capital, he's right down the hall. She, it, they, them. Not sure their pronouns, but they're down the hall. And they're here to bring you proper Bitcoin products. They start with their multi-sig vault, which is 2 or 3 multi-sig, which you hold 2 keys, so you always have control of your UTXOs. Unchained is there to be the second in the 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum if you need them to sign for you. Above that multi-sig structure, which is the basis of their company, they're offering you products. They have an IRA where you can roll your IRA into Bitcoin and hold your own keys using multi-sig. They have a lending desk, which allows you to put Bitcoin up as collateral in a multi-sig escrow account to get dollars with an attached interest rate using your Bitcoin to get liquidity. And now they have a trading desk, which is available, I believe, in 37 states right now. It's the most secure way to buy Bitcoin. You set up a vault, then you sign up for Unchained's trading desk at unchained.com/trading, and then you buy Bitcoin. Doesn't hover on Unchained's exchange at all. They're not an exchange. It doesn't hover on Unchained. You buy Bitcoin, it goes directly to multi-sig cold storage. It's the best, most secure way to buy Bitcoin. Buy straight to multi-sig cold storage. You buy straight to multi-sig cold storage. It's a beautiful thing. Go to unchained.com/trading. Check it out. Make sure that your state is available right now. They're adding states every day. Right now, I believe it's 37, maybe 38. That list is growing week in and week out, it seems. Check it out. I've used it. It's a great product. Makes me feel secure. You buy straight to multi-sig cold storage. No third-party risk there. This rip is also brought to you by good friends at Brains. Brains. Can we wrap this one? Should I wrap the Brains ad read? Are you a minor? I can't wrap. I'm not going to try. I'm not going to embarrass myself or besmirch the Brains name, because it's a very, very strong brand, very strong name in the Bitcoin space. Brains is the team behind Brains Pool, formerly Slush Pool, the oldest Bitcoin mining pool in existence, been around for quite some time. They're the creators of Brains OS Plus firmware, which allows you to download custom firmware onto compatible ASICs to help you stack more sats. As hash price is hovering around 7 cents a day, it is important that you are a smart miner. And if you have ASICs that are compatible with Brains and you're not running it, you are not running your operation smartly. You are running it like an idiot. You need to get as much profit margin as possible at these low hash prices. And that's what Brains allows you to do, Brains OS Plus firmware. So if you have an ASIC that's compatible with Brains OS Plus firmware, make sure you have it downloaded. You're going to stack more sats. Your wife's not going to look at you funny. You're going to elongate the life cycle of that ASIC. It's beautiful all around. Go check out Brains Insights as well, where you can monitor the hash price, monitor the difficulty, look at pool breakdowns, look at profit calculators. Check out their blog. Check out their books. Brains.com, BRAIINS.com. This trip was also brought to you by our good friends at HODL HODL. HODL HODL is here to bring you a peer-to-peer lending platform. No KYC, no AML, leverages Bitcoin's multi-sig properties, and has lower rates than other lending platforms. What you do is you put your Bitcoin up in a 2 or 3 multi-sig escrow account, 2 or 3 multi-sig wallet that is an escrow account. You hold one key. Your counterparty in the loan holds one key, and HODL HODL holds the third key. Since you have one key in that 2 or 3 multi-sig quorum, obviously, you can't move the Bitcoin by yourself. However, you do have visibility into the escrow wallet throughout the duration of your loan so that you can have comfort and peace of mind knowing that your sats are not being rehypothecated like some other lenders like to do. It's not possible on HODL HODL. You put your Bitcoin up as collateral. You get stablecoins in return. You can spend them as you see fit as long as you're paying back that loan plus the interest associated with it. You're going to get your sats back at the end of the day. Alternatively, if you want to get yield on stablecoins that you have laying around, you would put them up to be lent out on lend.hodlhodl.com. You do that. You give the stablecoins. You see the Bitcoin in the escrow wallet. You expect that person will pay back plus the interest that you attach to your loan. If they don't, you get some of the sats in the escrow account. It's a beautiful thing. Lend.hodlhodl.com. No KYC, no AML, peer-to-peer. Leverages Bitcoin's native multisig properties and has lower rates than other lending platforms. Go check it out. Last but not least, this rip was brought to you by our good friends at Blockstream. All right, Blockstream Jade particularly. It's an open source hardware wallet for the cold storage of Bitcoin and Bitcoin Layer 2 assets on Liquid, such as stablecoins. You can further enhance your security by keeping the keys to your Bitcoin and Liquid assets safely offline with Jade. Blockstream Jade houses a camera in full color 240 by 135 pixel 16-bit display. Scan and display QR codes directly on the device to sign transactions and verify addresses with ease. Manage your assets from mobile or desktop with Jade-compatible wallets such as Blockstream Green, Electrum, Sparrow, and Spectre. Use the promo code FREAKS, F-R-E-A-K-S, and get 15% off. It's promo code FREAKS at blockstream.com/jade-wallet. blockstream.com/jade-wallet. Very cheap device, and you're going to get it even cheaper when you use the code FREAKS. Enjoy this rip, freaks. Ta-key!
You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
All right, we're live. We're in person. Party rip.
What's going on?
This is the first time I've ever done this this setup in the studio.
Surprise, freaks.
A little awkward. But
in person.
You guys can finally see the wall that I've been pointing to and describing. Now you get it like in the frame.
I love how we told them on air last week that we didn't know if it was going to be Thursday or Friday. And
we knew we were going to be in person.
We're in fucking person.
The in-person rips are always good. We didn't make a list this week. Matt usually makes a list. He decided to...
I decided to fly to Austin instead of making a list.
Yeah.
I heard you were moving here.
I've lived here my whole life, actually.
I do think that's on your Twitter bio.
Should we tell our first time we ever met story or no? Are you comfortable sharing that?
I think we've talked about it on air before, right?
Yeah, so let's tell it again for those who haven't heard it. Do you want to tell it or do you want me to tell it?
I was pretending to live in Austin for OPSEC reasons. And Marty seduced me to come on the podcast. At that time, RHR didn't exist yet. It was like episode 23 of TFTC.
I was still at Barstool.
And I told Marty I was in town and I could come on the podcast. And I kept up the Austin lie. And then Marty told all the freaks that they were lucky to have Odell in the house from Austin. And then all the freaks were like, well, Marty would never lie to us. And it just continued.
You were from Austin because I was from Austin in New York. And I was like, this dude lives in...
You got talking to the mic, sir.
I was like, this dude lives in New York City. He's from Austin. And then like found out.
Well, that's not even the whole story. The first time we met was at the Ace Hotel. We did like a pre-podcast meet. And you told me you were in town and able to meet for coffee. And we met. And then I later found out that you worked in the area.
Yeah, I walked like three blocks.
The important part is all Bitcoin roads lead to Austin.
Well, anyway, so Michael.
Matt Odell will be here soon enough.
Let's introduce Michael to the freak. So Michael's a ride or die freak. He's a good friend. He's often behind the scenes. He works at Unchained Capital.
He's a partner at 1031.
And it's good to finally have him
used
in
to
front
work,
of the camera.
Used to work at WeWork in the block.
Been around.
Yeah, I met Michael when he was a shitcoiner.
It just
goes to show what great character he has that I appreciated him in spite of his shitcoinery.
Michael was not a shitcoiner, but Matt did meet when I was at the block. It's been a long time, and I was thinking about it earlier. I was like, we have our work cut out for us right now with these shitcoiners made a mess, and we got time. It's up to us to clean it up. So
yeah, how would you describe the mess that they've created? Predictable.
I think the first look at it is like, holy shit, we have a lot of work for us. It's a lot of education, but I think they set us up pretty nicely. It's the Bitcoin adage, everything's good for Bitcoin. And this is where we were able to explain self-custody and why you don't want a counterparty and what makes Bitcoin different than, you know, the rest of crypto. I think you did a good job of that with Glenn Beck. If anybody hasn't watched it, you should check that.
You fucking crushed the Glenn Beck interview.
Yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen. He did call me a radical, which I don't know how I feel about that.
Marty, you've called yourself a radical.
No, I said maybe.
Marty, you are a radical.
No.
he's so self-conscious
about
it.
This is so bad.
You literally have a tweet out that you were like, it's not my fault. They radicalized me.
That's... It won't be, it will be their fault when they do radicalize. I'm not going to get radicalized. I'm not radicalized. Bitcoin isn't radical. It is radical. But.
Is it possible to lower the thermostat?
It's a little warm.
Why do you guys keep it like 80 degrees in the commons?
I don't know how to control this thing. I come in, it's cold. I come in, it's hot. It does its own thing. You can control it though. I don't know if anybody wants to.
It's hot as fuck in here.
You want me to do it?
My ears are really hot because of the headphones.
We don't usually have five people in the room at once. We've got Logan. And Ty's in the room as well.
Ride or die freak Ty.
Ty was on our last party rip in Nashville with Ronan.
It's true. That was a great rip.
It was a great rip. We're definitely not getting that drunk on this rip.
No, I mean, we have an event after this, and then we have Bit Devs.
Yes.
So can you press down on the thermostat or...
Let me see how much slack I have on my...
The first topic I think we should talk about is Gemini halting... withdrawals on their Earn product. I think I have a lot of friends that got stuck in there. I warned all of them previously, but Gemini was considered one of the more trusted custodians in the space. They had the Winklevi twins as the showmen for it, and specifically the Earn product. So their quote unquote yield product is right now hung up in these issues that Genesis, one of the largest lenders, is having their own solvency issues. And then as a result, Gemini Earn halted withdrawals.
Yeah, so I think you guys, Bitcoiners, have been right about a lot of things, but this one really stands out specifically to you talking about how these things have been predatory on generating yield. And BlockFi was the start. We all know what happened to BlockFi, but then Gemini has been particularly buttoned up, but then they offered this yield generating product and now they're underwater in clients, and it's right next to the existing like custody product. So if it's your mom, mother-in-law, whoever has BTC and they're like, oh, you can generate 5-7%, whatever the number is, you click a button and now you have no Bitcoin.
It was even, worse than that, right? Like 100% predatory, because they probably sent out emails. Like, I don't know, I'm not a Gemini customer, but I imagine they were sending out emails to people like, what, you don't want 5%? Like, put your Bitcoin to work. Like, you get 5% if you click two buttons and move into the Earn product.
So I have a question that I've been trying to think about. I'll pose it to you. Based on what's going on, obviously, there's a lot of things we've been right about, whether it's with the fund, Unchained Capital, Bitcoin only. We've been right. Is it okay to say this is like, you know, you've been texting me, you've been invigorated all past 2 weeks, just loving every second. Is it okay to say that this is Bitcoiner's Super Bowl? Because I know there's a lot of people hurting and a lot of people messed up, but we're also like vindicated. And I think moving forward, this is going to be a healthy cleanse. So
it's certainly a double-edged sword where it's like, I mean, we've been fucking telling you people.
It's not a happy moment.
No.
But it's definitely like a told you so.
And a much needed moment. Like this was going to have to happen.
It's healthy long-term, because if it lasted longer, next cycle would have been brutal, right? It would have been way more people, way more amount of money.
Yeah. And Michael and I have been talking about this the last 2 days. Safe had a really good point on his podcast earlier this week about what should happen in the aftermath of this blow up. I think Michael, you can explain it better than I can.
I mean, there's been a lot of podcasts about all this. I think Safe's was one of the best. You know, he also explained some of SBF's logic being a soy maximalist and not eating meat. So he wasn't thinking clearly. So that played into this. But the basic gist was that SBF shouldn't go to jail, and because it gives an out to everybody that was participating in anything, whether it was the FTT token, FTX, whatever other stuff that they were tangled in. They never were thinking from first principles of like, why did this have value? Why am I involved with this? And so if you let SBF go to jail because he's this Ponzi dude, then you're like, okay, well now the next exchange or the next token that's launched, this guy's fair, this guy's normal, versus like, no, he's free because this is the free market and I have to think
about my
decisions.
Well, they should punish everyone who participated in the fraud and enabled the fraud.
Would you consider the retail traders who use the exchange.
I mean, it was straight up a Ponzi scheme that was enabled by rich benefactors, like notable venture funds.
That's the other.
Oh, yeah, everybody has egg on their face. Everybody.
Tom Brady.
There is nobody credible
anymore. Mr. Wonderful. Kevin O'Leary fucking said he would invest again. He would back SBF again. I mean, there's definitely two sides to the story. Like, first of all, this is a movement of radical personal responsibility. So anyone who lost money, part of the blame is on yourself as well. And I think it's important for people to realize that. Otherwise, they'll just go into another trusted relationship. They'll be like, it wasn't my fault. Like, no one could have seen this coming. Like, you know, we even saw, was it Kramer who said it? Like, Kramer blamed Pomp. He was like, fuck Pomp for getting me into BlockFi. Like, first of all, Kramer, like, you've gotten people into horrible investments yourself all the time. And so, and it is Kramer's fault as well, because he was the one who fucking did it. But the promoters that promoted it without disclosing the trade-offs, without making those trade-offs obvious to users, potential users, like, they were complicit in all this bullshit.
Yeah, I mean, the world really got messed up when accountability was lost, and, like, we all need to start holding people accountable. When you think about Pomp, Kramer, we got people that said BlockFi was solvent. They had people on their podcast saying it was solvent. People left their Bitcoin there, and now they have no Bitcoin. Like, people need to stop worshiping these people and understanding, like, there's ulterior motives. Yeah.
Yeah. Are we good over there, Logan? I see you moving around. Stream's fine.
Wait, so let's talk about Genesis for a second, because we have you, and I feel like you're more familiar with...
Yeah, so this comes back to the Gemini yield product. So that's part of this. That's where Genesis comes in. Genesis was the partner that was helping them generate that yield, and they were generating that yield by basically rehypothecating Bitcoin.
Well, they were an OTC desk too, right? But also they lent money to people?
They did everything.
Yes.
Yeah. They traded.
And they got exposed to Alameda specifically. I think it was like $400 million or north of $400 million. And that affected their balance sheet and their ability to provide the yield for Gemini users and others. I believe Circle was partnered with them too, but Circle's still up and running.
Does Circle go under this cycle?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Oh, that reminds me.
We have to clarify.
We were incorrect that the Silvergate CEO stepped down.
Alan Lane is still there.
And apparently he's a ride or die freak. So
yeah.
Appreciate you, Alan, for...
I spoke to Alan over the weekend.
Listening and participating.
Alan, I specifically came on the pod to make sure that they, were able to rectify that. And Silvergate is doing good.
And you can look at their balance sheet. I mean, it seems like liabilities and assets.
Don't trust any custodians. But Alan is still the CEO. We got that wrong.
Yes.
Right now, the only thing you can do to protect yourself is self-custody. That should always be the standard, but especially now. Take control of your own keys. It's not as complicated as people make it seem. Yes, it can get more complicated if you go into proper cold storage, if you move into multi-sig. But the entry level self-custody is as easy as installing a phone app. It's as easy as signing up for something like Unchained or Casa. Obviously, with those, you have a trade-off of privacy, but you don't have privacy on the custodians anyway. So you're not really losing privacy in that situation. It's very accessible. Like, if people call self-custody difficult, but go through all the friction of KYCing themselves, uploading their selfie, taking a facial scan, uploading their passport, like the blood of their first newborn. And then they do that. And then they go into these like complicated Ponzi schemes and so-called DeFi and whatnot. They can do all of that. But self-custody is too difficult is the most ridiculous fucking bullshit ever.
Agreed. It's... Logan, we good? We're good. It's insane. Like, I mean, that's become a big meme. People have been like, oh, self-custody is too hard. It's not. You download an app. I mean, in the most basic sense, you download an app, write down 24 words. As long as you can secure those words.
And make sure no one gets those secret words.
Yes.
Because then they can spend your money. And yes, it requires personal responsibility. Personal responsibility will always be the more difficult path. But it's significantly easier than it used to be.
I've had two conversations now. One with Glenn Beck, and then yesterday with Phil Geiger when he came on TFTC. Like, I think that's another message that really needs to be hammered home, is this does demand personal responsibility to an extent. And it's... taking that responsibility is a big move, but it's not that hard as well. And like, obviously there's many different ways you can take control of your Bitcoin, holding your own private keys. You can do it yourself in a single SIG address. You can do it between you, family members, or other trusted individuals with a multi-sig quorum that you guys control, or you can engage with somebody like Unchained, who's there to hold your hand through this process.
Yeah, I think the big problem is comes to like all of us and our friends and family and being the Uncle Jim is that like this asset doesn't map to the traditional financial world. And it's exact from an individual all the way to a venture fund. And from the individual, when you have a stock or a bond or whatever you're holding equity, like whatever you're holding it on a centralized exchange, you log in. If anybody ever hacks it, it's just reverse. It's taken care of. Even like the Fed, if you have dollars in a bank, something happens, they're bailed out. And that's what everything maps to. But with Bitcoin, they don't print anymore. And so if you leave it on a centralized custodian, they don't even know. Some people don't even know you can actually take possession of it. But that mental model of, okay, well, I can actually take physical possession. This is part of the asset. Similarly with lending it, is it maps to yield in the traditional world. And you think that, okay, well, I give up the BTC. And if something risk management, it's in something weird, like they'll figure it out. It's like, no, they don't figure it out. It's done. And we just saw like $20 billion.
We're literally seeing every
evaporate.
Pretty much every so-called yield provider is probably going to go down before the end of the cycle.
Yeah. And so just going up that stack, it's the exact same thing with the crypto VCs. It's like, they're like, this guy's printing money. There's all the, whatever the thing we'll give them, we'll help finance so they can lend against it. It's like all of that, you don't print any more Bitcoin. So if they're insolvent, it's a zero. This is effectively what's happening right now with DCG, or they're like out there trying to raise capital.
Right. So DCG is a parent company of Genesis, and they're investors in a shit ton of companies in the space. They run GBTC,
CoinDesk.
They own Boundary. CoinDesk. They own Foundry, the largest mining pool in the world.
They own a lot.
And Genesis seems to be insolvent.
They run GBTC. Did you mention that?
Yeah, GBTC.
And so DCG is Digital Currency Group.
Oh, Foundry as well, right? Do we say Foundry?
Yeah, we say Foundry. Yeah.
I have like a thread that lists all the, I think it's on the website still. It's crazy. Yeah, yeah. They're
from,
in everything.
From my understanding, just to be clear in all this, all of DCG's companies are very siloed off. So I don't think there's any contagion risk between something like Genesis and Foundry if Genesis goes under.
Hopefully not.
Hopefully not, yes.
Unless Foundry was lending out through Genesis. Their excess BTC and treasury to
which
generate
is very
yield.
Possible.
It's and is possible. I don't know if they were, but
well, hold your keys, freaks. It's easier than you would think. Start small. Get comfortable with it. Practice backing it up or storing it.
No, but yeah, but going back to like the people having egg on their face, and I'm not throwing anybody.
Dance on
the
graves, Marty.
I don't want to dance on the graves, but hey, this is somebody, Travis Kling. He had to come out. He runs Ikigai, which was a fund.
Ikigai,
however you pronounce it. We all know I'm not good at enunciating words here, but he had to come out with a thread. It was basically like all my funds AUM was custodied on FTX, and we're going to write down a significant portion to zero.
The hits are going to keep coming. Like last week, it was crazy. I know you talked about it with like the crypto influencers wondering like, how could SBF rug me? my money, my BTC. And like, we're going to see it. We saw it with Travis and it sucks. But that's the market. That's
hate to see retail get wrecked. Hate to see people touch the stove. Great to see. I think we're at all time high self-custody. It's impossible to know for sure. But we've seen massive withdrawals from exchanges. The simple concept, if you want to think about holding your own Bitcoin, is like if you go to a bank and you withdraw cash from an ATM, is as if you're withdrawing Bitcoin. But Bitcoin gives you even less counterparty risk when you hold it yourself because there's no centralized corrupt institution that can debase that money and inflate that money and print money out of thin air behind the scenes. So you have even less counterparty risk than if you take dollars out of an ATM. But I think most people can understand that as a concept. Like if it's in your bank account, it's just an IOU. It's just numbers on a screen that you might not be able to get access to. Go to a bank and tell them you want to withdraw $20,000 in cash. and see what they how they react to that. They're going to make it very difficult for you to withdraw that cash. So until it's in your hands, until that Bitcoin is in your hands, until you're holding those keys yourself, it's not your keys. And we saw with FTX specifically that when they went bankrupt, they had $1.4 billion worth of Bitcoin in liabilities that they owed to people, that they owed to customers, but they had zero Bitcoin on the balance sheet. They were selling Bitcoin that they weren't, they didn't actually have. It was fake Bitcoin.
It's insane.
And I wonder, you got to imagine that that suppressed the price of Bitcoin.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen that with gold. We've seen with gold that because gold is hard to custody yourself, centralized third parties essentially print fake gold. They inflate the supply of gold because they don't have actual gold reserves to back it up. And Bitcoin is different in that it's very easy to take self-custody. And I'm of the belief that as long as we have a large amount of people constantly taking self-custody of Bitcoin and stacking more sats over and over again. By the way, when I say stacking sats, it's inherently self-custody because if you don't take custody, you're not stacking sats, you're stacking IOUs.
You don't own Bitcoin.
And I think as people stack sats over time, anyone who plays games like this are going to get blown the fuck up. And we're seeing that right now.
Yeah, it's happened time and time again.
We talked about this a few weeks ago. It's like the premium on being able to actually hold the asset and nobody can take it from you in the world that we live in, where if you say something or your bank account, I think it was around when Kanye's deal happened. And then recently it's like, would I rather have $1 million in cash in a bank or 750,000 or 800? Like, what is that number that I'd rather have the BTC where nobody can take it and you know it's yours? That's like just an underappreciated.
I'd rather have 50 million sats self-custody than 100 million sats
on an exchange. Yeah. No, and this is something I articulated.
I might even go lower than that.
Well, that's the
but that number equal, for yeah. sure.
That's I articulated this at the Bitcoin John meetup in Philly a couple of weeks ago, where that the focus was on number go up. And I was like, yeah, number go up's cool, but like the real power of Bitcoin is just being able to use your money when you want to, because you possess it.
Yeah, and I think in emerging markets, they appreciate that. In Latin America, they get it with these bank balance. And in the United States, like, we're pretty stable where you go to the bank and your money's there.
Yeah.
And then there's this other aspect, right, where, you know, there's all these memes about like, oh, like decentralized exchanges fix this, blah, blah, blah. Traders will always flock to centralized exchanges because it's more convenient, it's less cost, it's easier for them to trade. And this is where staying humble and stacking sats really wins out long term, even if you're a good trader, because first of all, 99% of people who trade are going to get wrecked. There's a very few amount of people that can actually outperform just staying humble and stacking sats. And then the second thing is, if you actually are trying to implement a trading strategy, you have to trust centralized third parties to do that. And you always have this risk that you can go to zero overnight. And I have this tweet that the haters keep bringing up from 2021. And yes, it was like close to the top of the market, where I said over the next 10 years, the most successful investors will be those who stay humble and stack sats. And yes, anyone who's doing that is probably down on paper right now, but we're outperforming Duquan, Ikigai. Three Arrows Capital,
Ikigai,
like all the venture funds, like Alameda, like all the guys that all the influencers would tweet underneath King with like the salute or whatever, all at zero. They all got wrecked, and meanwhile, stackers are outperforming them.
Yeah. It's pretty simple. I mean, that's what American HODL said. It's simple, but it's hard. Like it's hard.
All the shiny objects.
All the people shitting on you, saying, oh, you're an idiot. You have to go through a lot of bullshit, but you have to harden yourself mentally and just say,
hey, I'm not the crazy one.
No. And I think that's going back to, like, as it's our Super Bowl, I think it's a vindication of, hey, I'm not the crazy one. This is the correct approach to bring to Bitcoin and a strategy to apply to this revolution.
Yeah, maybe the better metaphor is that this is our tea party. It's the Boston Tea Party.
One of the things I remember in late 2021, we were having discussions for the fund, and we were talking with, you know, Wall Street folks and just people that were, you know, traditional finance, and they were getting involved in like quote unquote crypto. And there was like this kind of, it wasn't, I don't, belittled, maybe not be the right word, but it was like, oh, it's cute. You guys are Bitcoin focused. We haven't seen that in a while. and they talked about just all these token funds and growth funds. But the only way I could summarize it when I got off these calls, and I think I maybe even told you guys, was like, it's like they read the forward to a book and they never opened the fucking book. So they just like heard digital assets. And then they're like, well, we need the hottest, shiniest thing. And there's that. And then there's maybe more at play with dumping, you know, on retail, which obviously is happening as well. But just like this whole Ponzi of $30 billion is just going to be evaporated. Right now, probably half of that has been evaporated between token and equity and crypto companies. And we still have another, you know, if we say $30 billion in the past 18 months. So.
Yeah. And it's not over yet.
Yeah.
There's still.
You're right in the middle of it.
Much more to come. And that's, I think, another interesting thing, focusing in on the shitcoiners is they're using this as an opportunity to say, hey, this is why we need DeFi. This is like, if you're going to regulate, you should not regulate DeFi. DeFi is the solution to this, which is, I think, just a massive cop out.
And you ignore like the hundreds of millions of dollars of DeFi hacks that happened over the last 2 years in the lead up to all of this.
Yeah, and it's, it's been said many times, but DeFi, there's nothing decentralized about it at all. I mean, I believe the most heavily traded asset between DeFi protocols is USDC.
And Tether.
And Tether, which are controlled, centrally controlled stablecoins. So you're, yes.
Look at the.
Maybe you can concede that there is some sort of decentralized aspect to these exchanges, but they're heavily dependent on these centralized, centrally controlled assets that there's literally one degree of separation from a government saying, hey, turn that off.
Yeah, they have a custodian involved.
Yeah, and then Wrapped Bitcoin.
Yeah, the perfect example is the Solana, quote unquote, DeFi ecosystem, which was run by Alameda and FTX and propped up by them. And the Wrapped Bitcoin token on there that was supposed to represent Bitcoin was custodied by Alameda.
Yeah, it's trading. There was like no
Bitcoin there. It was paper
right
Bitcoin. And because of the way like DeFi works, quote unquote DeFi works, all this shit gets wrapped into each other, right? Like there's all these edge cases where like random things are connected to random things, and then like someone runs some kind of whatever, and then other people that don't even see that, they don't see that counterparty risk. It's not obvious to them. They get rugged at the same time.
That's what they said happened to basically FTX, is they were running schemes at 50 to 100 million trading that you can't account for, model out at the scale they got to. So they just rugged themselves basically with their Ponzi-nomics.
Yeah.
The real DeFi is holding your own keys and using your own node, staying humble, stacking sats.
Yes. And like if there is, like what is the future of finance? These shitcoiners will say it's DeFi. I think that's noise. And Michael, you and I talk about this a lot. I think you have thought through this model, particularly like the future of finance is not decentralized exchange in this barter, this token bartering economy. It's if you really want like robust financial products on a Bitcoin standard, like the real decentralized finance is going to be distributed multi-sig quorums.
Yeah, collaborative custody. There's always going to be some form of trust if you want to work with different parties, especially in a financial world. And the easiest example, this is something, you know, credit to Joe and Drew early on, was the Bitcoin-backed loan, where it's a 2 of 3 multi-sig. The client gets to participate. Unchained holds a key, and then a third party holds a key. And so when you think about decentralized, if Unchained goes away, something happens, the way that the contract is written up, the client still has the title and there's a legal agreement and they can go to the third party and they have stipulations within a certain amount of days that they can recover those assets. And something like that is able to prevent what we've seen in these markets. And common questions or concerns is like, well, what if Unchained and the third party were to collude, rug us, you know, obviously it's like, well, that actually is possible. But the other side of that is, well, our businesses or Unchained's business is, you know, completely gone. All credibility is gone. It's illegal. So somebody's probably going to jail. And so there's no, we're looking at trust minimized. There's no like just, you know, risk free. And so the idea of like, if you want certain financial products, there's going to be trusted entities. They're going to build reputation scores and they're going to work with each other. And that goes the same for like even custody. I have this like long-term thought that this is going to be very contrarian, especially internally at Unchained, but I don't think everybody ends up holding their keys. I think the way it works is different institutions across the world that end up trusted will hold some form of keys. You'll have some segregated assets. You'll be able to go and see on chain that your BTC sits there. You take a loan, you'll be able to prove that it's there. You'll be able to, you know, the liabilities are something that have to be figured out, obviously. But there will be this transparent nature in the products, and they'll evolve over time that won't be, again, mapping to the old world of here's Coinbase, here's Gemini. I trust you to hold my assets. And then you wake up one day and the withdrawals are paused.
Yeah. And this isn't to say this is like where everybody should hold their Bitcoin, but it's like if you want to interact with financial products, like Michael said, there is going to be a degree of trust needed. And Bitcoin's native properties, particularly multi-sig, allow you to minimize that trust and give you some certainty as you're interacting with these products. Since you hold a key in the quorum, if you do hold a key, you have visibility into the wallet and you know your sats aren't being rehypothecated.
It's risk minimization.
Yes.
It doesn't remove risk. And then, I mean, that there's two different products, right? Because the vault product, you actually hold, the user holds the majority of keys.
Yeah, and unilateral control. They can always move so them like, with or without Unchained.
Unchained can go out of business, and the Bitcoin is still there, and the Bitcoin can be moved by whoever the entity is that is storing it with Unchained. And I expect to see that become more popular among, you know, the Michael Saylors of the world, the MicroStrategies of the world that right now are using a regulated custodian where they have no keys, where they have no control over their funds. And that way they get like that white glove, they get that like handheld kind of service. And that could be very beneficial to those kind of large entities that don't want to do the sovereign way, don't want to do the fully sovereign way. But to your earlier point, I think anyone who's there, I think most people who don't hold their own keys are going to get rugged eventually, period. That is my belief. Maybe it's hardline. I've been accused of FUD. I resurfaced a tweet from 2021 where someone accused me of FUDing custodians by saying, not your keys, not your coins. And I said, if you think that's FUD, you're going to have a fun time. Enjoy it. Well, he's definitely having a fun time now. And I think ultimately on a long enough time scale, if you don't hold your own keys, you're going to get rugged eventually.
So here's the thing that like everything in life is all about trade-offs. Yeah. So the individual that takes a 2 of 3, that's an excellent product. I was a client of Unchained before joining, knew I had to get my Bitcoin off of an exchange, and it's great. But there is personal responsibility, and God forbid you don't trust anybody. Whatever happens, you lose those funds. You have kids. They can't recover that Bitcoin.
Yeah, that's what happened to me. And then I had to start my stack.
You had to start over. They say,
yeah, it happened like a week ago.
All my stuff's still on FTX. I've been trying to get logged out. I have emails there. Yeah. So, but like, I think that it's hard for like, who are we to say like an endowment, an institution that wants exposure and wants it in the best form that is available to them because they can't hold a key in 2022. Well, is there a world where they participate in a multi-sig quorum where they can see that they have $1 billion on chain and Goldman Sachs on chain and NYDIG gold key, whatever the quorum set is, if that's their way they can get it and they're not at risk for somebody going belly up or taking their Bitcoin and rehypothecating, like it's a better product. Similar with like an ETF, we're seeing right now, whatever's happening with GBTC, in a future, I think like an ETF, it's the same kind. Maybe it's a 3 of 5, but the idea is that if you're going to have this large swath of capital, because an ETF is going to come eventually, right? Do we agree on that?
Right.
And it should
be. And it'd be strictly better if it was held in a multi-party collaborative custody model.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, if we all head our way, everybody holds their Bitcoin and we ride off into the sunset.
That's the way to prevent the paper Bitcoin.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're just early. You know, we're early. We're figuring this out. But I think a lot of people, you know, there's a lot of discussions. I think after Celsius and a lot of the blowups on the lending side a few months ago, we've had a lot of calls and a lot of interesting institutions talking to us or looking at us because it's like, what are those guys doing over there? They haven't suffered any loan losses. They're having record, you know, whether it's inbound balances, trading, like they have everything in house and they seem to be doing okay. Well, all this stuff spreading, like, let's find out what's happening.
It's the low time preference way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you guys have been very busy this week, I imagine.
Yeah, this week's been incredible. I know you had Phil on yesterday. It's been a real like vindication. It's been nice to see even before me, like, you know, Parker Joe, I think Parker Joe Drew, back in the day, like we think about the arc, and I'm fine with saying it because they hurt a lot of people, but BlockFi, you know, like BlockFi always mapped in my head to WeWork in the sense of like just flying real close to the sun and spending dollars. And like we found out today, or not found out, but like it's been known that these centralized lenders basically had the worst risk management, because when they needed to liquidate people's positions so they can stay whole, they told them not to liquidate because they had to show revenue so they can continue their growth, so they can raise more capital. And that's essentially what happened with BlockFi, and I think even Celsius. So they had positions, they were underwater to the Three Arrows, whoever else. And rather than liquidate, get their clients whole and move on, they let those loans stick out and they basically either try to recover, whatever happened. But the point being that those guys were just playing this like game while Unchained was taking the slow, steady approach. You know, it didn't make sense. Maybe investors, maybe other people involved wanted to go that route, whether it's supporting different coins or, you know, maybe lending out client. And like for Parker, Joe, Drew, and the team that started this firm to think, well, we need to, you know, this asset's different. We have to treat it differently. We have to treat clients differently, how they're onboarded, and the education is just, it's kind of, again, when we say about the Super Bowl, there's a better word, but it's been fun to see like it all work out.
Yeah. And I guess that leads to, how does the broader market react to this? What is, do they learn this lesson, particularly people with bigger pools of capital, institutions? Do they stay away from the space? Does it benefit 1031? Or do these guys say, I don't want to touch this, and they'll just have to wait until Bitcoin proves like, hey, it survives, the companies survive?
Well, that's why we got you going, Glenn Beck, and educate the boomers and all our parents and grandparents.
You absolutely crushed the Glenn Beck interview. It was fantastic. But you also crushed the Barstool Sports interview too.
No, I mean,
completely different demographics. They were both really good.
Yeah, no, I told.
Got to get the message out
there. We were talking last
Bitcoin
week.
Self-custody.
Yeah, we had a 1031 meeting, and it was like, we need to get out there.
Oh, well, fuck 1031. Yeah. The Bitcoin message needs to get
out
there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But I do earnestly believe, like, we as advocates, as evangelists, whatever, as Bitcoiners, need to get out there and make it clear to the public, hey, we've been saying for years there is a clear distinction between Bitcoin and crypto, and you may not have seen us like beating this drum for many years. Not your keys, not your coins. Yield does not come without severe risk. A lot of these shit coins are going to blow up. They're all pump and dumps. We've been saying that for years. I don't think that broader audience has been getting that message. It's probably been insular to Bitcoin Twitter. And so I do think as Bitcoiners, it is important that we try to get on these broader platforms to get this message out there.
Yeah, I agree. It's imperative from all aspects. The venture side, like Safe talked about it, like this is the premier example of how late stage fiat we're in, of how out of control like this whole FTX thing got with no diligence. But then the premier venture firm, Sequoia Capital, like got hit both ways, because they like supposedly they don't let anybody in to on the LP side. Like you just, and he invested, so he tainted the funds that are they're investing. And then they also took a zero and claimed that this guy was a genius.
So he was an investor in Sequoia.
He's an investor, and they let him in as an LP. And they invested in FTX. And it just tells you, like everything is upside down right now. Nobody actually knows what's happening in the general world, but like right, especially what's happening in Bitcoin. So going out there and educating and explaining, I think, is like the most important thing.
The better question is, would we have hit 200K by conference day if SBF wasn't selling fake Bitcoin?
Oh, here it comes. Here it comes. You've been prepping.
It's the redemption arc.
You've been prepping for this. We were at dinner last night. Matt was explaining his 200K by conference day redemption arc. It was paper Bitcoin.
We would have made it if it wasn't for that SBF.
If it wasn't for these.
I'm mostly kidding.
Mostly. Yeah, who knows what would have happened? And so that's another question with it becoming blatantly obvious that FTX did not have any Bitcoin. Like, again, we said it last week. They were portraying.
FTB agrees with me.
They were portraying to have over 70,000 Bitcoin, and they had zero. Obviously, all the people who are having to eat a zero on that are washed out. Who knows if they have dry powder to reinvest in Bitcoin or even.
And Tom Brady doesn't even have a wife.
He doesn't have a wife. His wife's got a boyfriend, or ex-wife. I don't know if they're officially divorced, but like, is there, do you think, because there's many ways this can go, like people can stay away, but there's also a possibility that people see what happened to FTX, like, oh shit, they didn't have any Bitcoin. Like, who else doesn't have any Bitcoin? Like,
there's definitely others out there.
I need to get Bitcoin and move it to keys that I control. Like, does this actually create like a mad dash for Bitcoin, as people realize?
I mean, Celsius was doing similar, just not to the level of FTX.
Yeah. Like, does it create FOMO?
And like, BlockFi was rehypothecating as a service.
Yeah. I don't know. I could see it go either direction.
Feels like there's one more shoe to drop before.
I think there's a lot more shoes. I mean, if DCG's in trouble, like maybe USDC goes down. People learn, like, to if we want to talk about lessons learned by touching the stove. Imagine if this is the cycle that not only teaches people that first of all, the real yield is holding a long term position in an extremely scarce hard money, Bitcoin, and that all those yield products were all bullshit. They were all predatory products to trick you to parting with your Bitcoin. That self-custody is important. We might get a lesson. The insider who rugged FTX, most likely an insider because they had keys, that took all the FTX funds that were remaining after bankruptcy, is holding it majority in ETH.
Yeah,
right,
that
now
happened between.
We might get a proof of stake censorship lesson.
Yeah, because they had the 32nd largest holder.
To top it all off, a major stablecoin goes down to show that they're quote unquote stablecoins and not actually stablecoins, and the sats are the true stablecoin. If we had all of those lessons in a single bear cycle, be pretty.
I mean, we would be completely vindicated. Like, everything.
It'd be very hard to stay humble.
Everything we've been saying. Yeah, no, we should stay humble here. Again, it does suck that people are getting washed out.
Well, and that we're poor because of the Bitcoin that we did start buying after we lost on. You know,
my net worth on paper is down like 80% from a year ago, and I'm somehow bullish, which is insane. I mean, I know that's the price is probably tanking right now as a result of me saying I'm bullish, but
I mean, it's good.
It's a pretty crazy phenomenon.
It's good you didn't stake your whole, you know, career, friends, livelihood on this one asset.
Completely all in Bitcoin. If Bitcoin fails, pretty much fucked.
Yeah, what are
I think we're fucked regardless. So.
Yeah, that's always been the plan.
It's the like thesis. We're fucked.
They launched.
That's where the conviction comes from. Yeah. Bitcoin is hope.
Yeah, I mean, on that, they launched their CBDC this week, test. So.
Well, technically, Marty would say it's not a CBDC because it's run by the evil banks instead of the evil central banks.
Well, the Fed's involved with it. The Fed, they're...
Is this part of the inner cabal squabble, or this is...
FTX, it might have been.
Marty said the Fed was going to save us from CBDCs like 3 weeks ago. Roll the tapes. Logan, play that clip.
They're saying it's
you.
A digital
I'm
dollar.
Kidding, I didn't set it up.
Is a digital dollar CBDC?
Surveillance money. It's surveillance money that they have complete control over, that a small group of people, one might say a cabal, have complete control over.
Yeah, but like you've said, they already do, right?
Yeah, but more control than they are. A tightening of control, right? Like,
granular.
There's
control.
Surveillance on your Venmo. There's surveillance on your PayPal. There's surveillance on your Chase Quick Pay or whatever. There's surveillance on your bank accounts. But like in the background, all that surveillance has to be and control has to be like collated through like 50-year-old TradFi technology, and like they're sending faxes to each other and stuff with suspicious activity reports. A digital, like blockchain based type of surveillance money would automate all of that control. That would automate all that surveillance. It obviously would be strictly worse. And you mix that with a reduction of cash usage, and it gets really, really, really dark really fast. And that's not just a government banning cash. Most of our peers do not use cash. Like, people do not use cash. If you walk around Austin, a lot of these places are card only or digital payment app only. They don't even accept cash now. People are choosing it out of convenience.
Yeah, like last night when we went to that bar after dinner, that had live music, we had a $5 cover, and I was like excited to like pull cash out.
They were all cash business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love to see that. That's a rare breed. But yeah. I like to support the cash businesses.
It's like shutting off and all this. I was thinking about poor Marty, like they're gonna shut off everything for his verse. These like radicalized Glenn Beck appearances, like you're gonna say something, and you're like, you can't buy coffee today, sir.
Luckily, I
have Bitcoin.
I have Bitcoin. self-custody, so I'm not worried about that. My parents own a coffee roaster, so I'm pretty sure they won't cut me off from the coffee.
That's good.
I can have them send me some. But yeah, I mean, I know we got into a heated argument last week, and I'm not going to take it there, but I do think it is important to bring up to the freaks. I do think there is a smoking gun here. So I've been talking to a lot of people.
Tell us, Marty. Tell us.
Behind the scenes about what's going on. I mean, so one aspect of this FTX debacle that is very interesting is their corporate structure. They had 134 sub-companies, I believe, and I mean, people are speculating that they're using these shell companies to funnel money to Democrats. I'm not going to go there, but they're like smoking.
Go wherever you want, Marty.
Yeah, we do need. Wait.
I'm not censoring you.
I think we should go there.
What's important is after our argument, your brother agreed with me. That's what's important.
Yeah, my brother came over after that episode.
I'm splitting the Bent household.
And he was like, yeah, Matt really got into it today, but I need to let you know I think I'm on his side. And I DM'd him and told him that.
There is $20 billion missing and nobody knows where it went.
Yes.
There was a lot of evil at play. There was a lot of fraud. There was definitely a Ponzi scheme.
Yes.
These are all true. There's a shit ton of corruption, especially on the regulatory side. All of these are essentially facts.
So, yeah, and this is where I think going to the corruption on the regulatory side, this is where the smoking gun is. So, like, one of FTX's sub-companies, particularly FTX US's sub-companies, it was called, or it is called, West Realm Shire Services, Inc. And this is the company that wound up buying Ledger X, which is a clearinghouse, a CFTC regulated clearinghouse.
It's a bear market, so instead of a cooler, we have a trash can. Continue, yes. Marty.
And this is a smoking gun to me, because how was one of FTX's sub companies able to buy a CFTC regulated clearinghouse? I've got one over here. Thank you. When the due diligence process to actually become a party that the CFTC would be comfortable acquiring a clearinghouse would be so immense. Like, yeah. If CFTC actually did proper due diligence, you would imagine it would be trivial to discover that FTX wasn't running a legit operation. I mean, they didn't even have a bank account for FTX until earlier this year. They were running it all through Alameda. Like, so that right there, the fact that one of these sub companies was able to buy Ledger X, a clearinghouse regulated by the CFTC, and that got okayed is just very perplexing to me.
They ran an offshore derivative exchange. And he was hanging out with presidents and donating, while you have Arthur Hayes running around the world trying to like hide from.
Well, Arthur's the agencies. Big winner of all this. He got a $10 million fine slap on the wrist.
But it's just the premise. Like, it was and always suspect. Is killing it was right always now. Suspect.
And how has he not been arrested?
Yeah, it was always suspect what he was SPF. Doing because yes. Everybody they've tried this since.
Like, I do not think Arthur should be arrested.
No, but how is SBA? Like, you showed me the picture. He was like in a grocery store, yeah. Just like acting normal.
I don't know if that was a recent picture.
Yeah. Well,
you got to love the internet. There was like some sleuths in there. They like went to Google Maps and they were like, there should be a building out this window, unless it was like six months ago or 7 months ago or whatever.
Not to go back to Caleb Krusty, but that's one of the coolest things about FTX having a 304 and never suspending funds, even while they were in jail, to be able to sign.
BitMEX.
Yeah. To be able to sign to move the funds. Even when, remember they were like, were trying to get them all in.
And then meanwhile, like the 3 hours capital guys are trying to go for a redemption arc and not take personal responsibility and blame that. And I mean, he's in Bali. They don't have an extradition treaty.
Yeah. And the CNBC interviewer like put him on. Held his feet to the fire there. She's like, why are you in Bali? They're one of the few countries with no extradition treaty with the U.S. Is that why? He was like, no. I love it here.
But supposedly FTX rugged them as well.
Yeah. I mean,
that doesn't surprise me.
But
they should take some personal responsibility for trading on a rival hedge funds exchange. Yeah. Like that's all on you.
Yeah.
Well, that's another important aspect of like the fraud that we haven't touched is that Alameda, was the hedge fund that FTX spun out of, and they were marketing that the two entities were completely separate. It's becoming very obvious that they're very well connected, sending funds back and forth from each other. And then on top of that, FTX Alameda had full view into FTX's order books, was able to basically,
they could see everything.
They could target people's positions and blow up
hunting positions.
Yeah. So they probably did hunt Three Arrows Capital's positions down.
I prescribe to the theory that they saw a weakness in Three Arrows Capital's Luna Terra trade, hunted that position to take down Three Arrows Capital, didn't realize all the connected contagion, and then shot themselves at the same time and took a big hit themselves when they did that.
Yeah, and that's what people have been theorizing is why they went to bail out Voyager, bail out BlockFi, and others, because those companies had FTT token exposure and they didn't want them to dump the FTT.
Because then their whole Ponzi goes to shit.
Yes.
And then CZ kind of did the same thing to them.
Mm-hmm.
Because his exchange also trades FTT. And I think also he didn't realize the level of contagion that would blow back on him as well.
Do you think he's been...
So it's like the same thing happened three times in a row.
Do you think he's being adversely affected by this contagion?
I don't think he fully
understood
the repercussions.
Yeah.
And you can tell it by the, like, he's a pro at this shit, but like you can tell it by the external messaging or whatever. Like he's, and particularly the idea that regulators are already kind of looking at it and others are looking at it as CZ taking out a rival.
Yeah.
That's a tough one because like, did. Like the other side of it, he's just stacking a bunch of Bitcoin.
It's yeah. pure capitalism to a degree. You know, this is what happens in free-ish markets, right? Obviously, shitcoin trading and even like the current Bitcoin trading situation is not like a truly free market. It's significantly freer market, more permissionless market than any TradFi markets. I would say the freest market is actually proof of work in the conversion of energy to Bitcoin.
Yes.
That's the freest market we've ever seen in humanity. But this is what happens when you don't have backstops, when you don't have, you know, hours that exchanges close, when you don't have circuit breakers, when you don't have the Fed.
Yeah, it's a true free market. Banks. Like, it sucks.
Survival of the fittest. It's true free market. Straight up survival of the fittest.
Yeah.
I was just thinking like 20, 30 years, kids are going to be, you know, whatever happens, they're going to be looking back and saying like, what the hell were y'all doing? Like what happened but that's that what, week?
And we're going to be able to say we weren't doing any of that shit.
I actually agree with...
we're just like, what was happening in the world?
I agree with detractors to a degree that it is the Wild West, but I think that's one of the main value props of yes. Bitcoin.
Quick lessons. That
it's like every man for himself to a degree.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it's every man for himself. Yeah. Like no one will save you. You have to save yourself.
And
yeah.
a million people... connected to FTX are learning that lesson this week, and then beyond FTX as the contagion spreads, more and more are learning.
I will say, you mentioned like what our kids will say, like looking back, I'm just like, I'm happy that the moment that we were born into is one where we can benefit from staying humble and stacking sats rather than taking the whole family in a carriage and like trying to go west to secure land.
Dying like, of dysentery.
Like getting killed by Native Americans and fucking sounds like snake somebody bites
watched,
and shit.
Somebody watched 1883.
Yeah. Yeah. That is... I'm grateful to be alive now, too. Yeah, that would be much worse, Wild West, to have to try to survive.
No, this exact moment is the best time to ever
it's like It's like that meme or whatever where it's like, please, Jesus, like help me or whatever. And it's just like, Jesus responds back. He's just like, fold your goddamn laundry. You yeah. know? It's like that, but just stay humble, stack sats. Like, that's all you have to do.
Yeah.
No leverage.
Ty's asking about the sex tape that's going to drop tomorrow. Don't watch porn, freaks.
Is the sex tape real?
I don't know. I'm not going to watch it if it is.
Are you sure?
One time Marty looked up porn on air.
No, I didn't look up porn. I looked up something and porn popped up.
That one got Logan.
Yeah. What else are we learning this week?
What do you want us to talk about, freaks? Hit us in the live chat. If
well, how do we dance on these graves?
Well, then we should prematurely.
Humbly.
We
have to dance on the graves humbly.
I don't want to back into this, but I think you might be able to better because your whole thread with ETH ties into it is whatever we're seeing with FTX. I think we see the you know 10x version of it with ETH when it all unwinds.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, that's...
You cannot withdraw stake ETH right now.
No.
If you stake ETH, it is stuck there unless the devs decide to add withdrawal support at some indeterminate time in the future. Meanwhile, Vitalik is selling ETH on the market while people are stuck in fucking...
We should go backwards staking. And letting people know, just in case, like that not only was ETH pre-mined, but there is a small cabal that owns, you know, let's call it 80 to 90%. And so when you think about the same thing that FTX did with their token, is the There's exact like four same dudes. Thing. It's four dudes. You you create a token, you hold it, and then you start washing it around exchanges and giving like venture capitalists money to start launching and investing in the ecosystem. And then you lock it in and now everybody starts dumping money in it. But
yeah, and it shouldn't be lost on everybody that FTT was spun up on Ethereum. Like Ethereum is, as Safe likes to put it, the mother asshole from which all these shit coins.
I love that. And Binance has their own exchange token that FTT was modeled off of too, BNB.
Yes. The exchange token model is completely ridiculous from first principles. But yeah, no, Ethereum. We were talking about this last night at dinner. I don't think it's well known publicly, but I don't care. I'll share it here. But I got lunch. I won't name his name. Back when I was in New York, it's probably like 2018 or 2019, with somebody who was pretty high up at the Ethereum Foundation. And back at that time, Vitalik announced that he had publicly sold a lot of his Ethereum. And when he sold that, he basically coordinated to sell to an anonymous buyer.
He doesn't even have to announce it because he has no fucking privacy. You can just see it on chain.
So, but that happened back then, and he sold like a very big chunk of his stake to this anonymous buyer, and it became known to him and others that the anonymous buyer happened to be Joe Lubin. It was
Everyone thinks Vitalik is the one who runs ETH. It's really Lubin who runs ETH. Vitalik is like the nerdy front man.
Yes.
He's like the SBF of ETH.
Yes. So like Joe Lubin, and there's many.
Well, Lubin is Gary Wang.
Yeah, Gary Wang. Who's Gary Wang?
Who is Gary?
Joe Lubin.
Does anybody know who Gary Wang
We're
is?
We're trying to get him on the pod, so if anybody finds him, we'd love to have him on.
The best part of the Gary Wang is that he's on Sequoia's website with just like a dude facing the other way in front of a computer.
To be clear, because we just like brought him up, he's the co-founder of FTX, right?
So yeah, he's worth $10 billion, and nobody knows who he is. And
they lent
him.
They lent him money too, right?
I don't know.
Like, I think he was connected with Sequoia too. Like I think he was like
an advisor
Sequoia
or something.
Advisor.
Yeah. Co-founder. He's worth $10 billion, and nobody
all
has.
Over the place.
It all stinks, freaks. It stinks. That's all I'll say.
It definitely does.
It stinks to the high heavens. I don't know what's going on.
But the beauty is, this is the crazy part. The crazy part is, one of the reasons I didn't make the list is because I flew here for this rip and to see these boys and the great people we have in Austin. But the other reason is because it's actually been an extremely slow news week for Bitcoiners that hold their own keys.
Yeah.
There hasn't been that much to go on. It's just all this chaos that is happening around us that people are trying to blame on Bitcoin when it's completely unrelated to Bitcoin. Like this was a straight up Ponzi scheme that didn't even hold any Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah, the dude was trying to regulate against Bitcoin.
Dude, it came out today. Like the new CEO of FTX has essentially just been hired to take care of the bankruptcy proceedings. Like he came out with a comment this morning, like this is like a worse fraud than Enron, like the way the books were managed. They were using some metaverse CPA as their accountant, the first CPA of the metaverse. And
did they like, they would go to meetings in the metaverse?
Yeah, I don't know.
Did you see the other code?
There was zero due diligence. That's what I'm saying. Everyone who
that's why it stinks. Going back to the clearinghouse, like, That's what like leads me to makes it hard to believe that the state was not involved in this in some way.
The state was involved in it.
There was definitely I think it's
it would be naive to think the state wasn't involved with this.
Specific policymakers, specific regulators, like corrupt all the way to the core.
He was funding. He paid $15 billion to like ivermectin. Like, what the fuck?
We have a system in place where bribery of our politicians and our regulators is pretty much legal. Like there are loopholes, and sometimes not even actual loopholes. Like you just can fucking pay them.
But why has anybody else been able to do it? Why has Arthur Hayes never figured it out? CZ, he is richer than anyway.
Because Arthur Hayes was a Bitcoiner first, and then he launched BitMEX. CZ was a Bitcoiner first, and then he launched Binance. SBF was a fiat elite guy who came in, was never a Bitcoiner, never understood the Bitcoin thing, never understood the Bitcoin value prop, never understood the Bitcoin ethos. And he came in as an insider and came in within that corruption society.
Like state
right?
insider, right?
Look, I mean,
definitely. I mean, his mom's one of the biggest Democratic.
Nobody knows where he got his money from, how he got there. They don't even know the actual trading volume was what the trading volume is. There's like two.
Dude, in 2017, 2017, every rich kid,
well, he
could spin up a $10 million fucking ICO fund in like a week by just like reaching out to their friends, their parents' friends, and having them stake them.
Well, how do you go from that to having the largest Bitcoin exchange and bringing down the whole crypto market?
You launch your own fucking shitcoin ICO, and then you trade it on your own exchange. Is like, that's a very classic shitcoin model. Like, we've seen so many shitcoiners go huge and then just fucking, they go big real quick and they just get fucking wrecked.
There was something that, this is
I
just...
I don't know, it stinks, man.
It definitely stinks, but we don't want to trigger Matt because
I'm not triggered. I love arguing with both of you. One of the reasons why we needed to get Tanguma on is because we just argue behind the scenes and it was important that he was in front of the camera. I love a good debate. I at the end of the day, I want the truth to be out there. But I just, like...
We're telling you the truth.
Look, our society has extremely broken incentives. It's corrupt to the core. This is all aware.
That's the easy way out.
If this was a deep state attack against Bitcoin, it was the worst fucking deep state attack against Bitcoin ever. This might be short of... It's up there with the Chinese mining ban and the Chinese miners successfully moving out of China in terms of the bullish level it is for
Bitcoin. It doesn't have to be a deep state attack. It has to be a money funneling.
I would even go as far as it's more likely to be a deep state attack against shitcoins than it is a deep state attack against Bitcoin.
They funneled $20 billion through this exchange and nobody knows where it went.
This is where maybe my perspective on this has changed. Throughout the week, maybe I could certainly see it not being an attack on Bitcoin or crypto, but it does seem like the corruption and money funneling was.
I agree with all that.
Was happening.
Yeah.
There was a lot of money laundering happening.
What is weird, though, that like Congress is still pushing forward the bill that he crafted with them to regulate the space. It's like, how could you.
The way that? I summarize it to you that I just am sticking with is it was a money funneling operation. They lost $20 billion and then. Whether CZ was in or found out or not, it was a call option on just blowing up the whole industry. that's as simple.
Like, I mean, it would have been a way more successful attack if FTX was allowed to survive. If they kept FTX around and like they were passing this regulation and one of the largest shitcoin exchanges was asking for the regulation and kept on going and kept on trading paper Bitcoin, and like. What's a few billion dollars between corrupt politicians? Like, they could have saved FTX and had it continue. Like, if you really wanted to attack Bitcoin, it would be way better to keep FTX around for longer than to blow it up when you blew it up.
Well, this gets into, like, an interesting part of the story, too. Like, did CZ, like, blow up a much bigger con that they were working on via FTX? Like, did he sort of fucking ruin the party for them? Did they have bigger plans to funnel more money and...
CZ definitely ruined a lot of parties. That's for sure.
It is.
Straight up kill shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, the two aspects are, it's difficult to understand where CZ, if he prematurely, and then also the Fed raising
CZ's
rates,
just a sovereign
that party
individual.
As well. Because how much longer would it gone for? Yeah.
CZ serves himself. He's a sovereign individual. He's just, you know.
Matt loves CZ.
As CZ, where Binance is based, and he will not give you an answer. Binance is global.
Yeah. And like if, so this guy, bringing it back to like.
It brings me back to Snow Crash with the guy walking around with the nuke around him.
Yeah, but bringing it back to like the regulatory blowback that many people are expecting, like it's becoming glaringly obvious with the FTX thing. Again, Smoking Gun being the clearinghouse that they were able to purchase, where if anybody did any rudimentary level due diligence, should have been able to find out that FTX was a fraud and revoke their ability to buy that clearinghouse. Like the fact that that happened with strict regulations around clearinghouses in and of themselves, not even on crypto yet, and then they're going to try and force more regulation. Like this whole situation has proven that regulations don't matter. Like the people are going to find a way to cheat the system. And so like, should the SEC, should the CFTC, should these regulators exist in the first place? Because
no.
There, no, obviously. Like, so that's,
I mean, I think this was obvious before.
Yeah, how do we get that message out there? Like they're going to come back and
pop. We just opt out. There's no winning that battle. Regulator's going to regulate.
But how do we? I mean, it's a big uphill battle, but making that clear to the public, like, hey, this happened because regulators weren't only asleep at the wheel, they were actively participating and enabling this for
always all. Has been.
Yeah.
Always the case. Look at the connections Madoff had. Look at the connections MF Global had.
Yeah, Madoff.
They all had massive connections.
Madoff was on the board of the NYSE, wasn't he?
He was intimately connected with everything. I'm not sure of the specifics.
I think he was on the board of the New York Stock Exchange.
And a lot of innocent people got wrecked in that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, he got sent to like the coziest prison ever. He got sent to a prison that is nicer living conditions than like 99% of the world.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't buy any of it. Like, we go back to all the funds that we talk about around here that are in trouble, like the early Sol and tokens, and just like the conception of Alameda and this wonder child and like the propaganda, and then getting into all of the different key influencers in this space. Like, there's nothing organic about that. Nobody's ever done that on any exchange level.
Well, they paid all the influencers. The rumor is that
yeah, but where did the money come from?
The rumor is that Bankless, one of the most downloaded and watched shows in the space, was making $250,000 a month in sponsorships.
Is that like a Bitcoin podcast or what?
They literally got bought. No, it's a shitcoin podcast. They literally got bought by all of these fucking scams, and they sold it directly to their audience. Like, money fucking corrupts people. It is at the core of human nature. We see it all the fucking time. They're all complicit in this shit. You can buy off most people.
And we want you freaks to know they've tried to buy us out. Yeah, we
I know, look at that hat.
I mean,
at the end of the day, it's a long term game with actual reputation on the line. And integrity should win out long term. The incentives align long term.
Yes.
But short term, the incentives are extremely broken.
Low time preference.
Hey, we fought last week, but at least one of us didn't cry on camera like a little
girl. I can't believe while all the scam ads were coming up too.
Oh, that was the best part. He's crying. I sent a tweet about it, or somebody like sent me the video, and then like I watched the video. It was the first time I watched it, and like he's crying, and he's like, "Oh, there's so many scammers in the space," and I just like took one of the advertisers, TrueFi, go to their website, and they're offering 26% risk-free APY. And then they had, like, it's your typical Parallax, like, startup site. You go down to, like, the second section, and it's trusted by Alameda Research. Like,
they bought off all these motherfuckers. Like, everyone was bought off.
You're crying on camera about people getting scammed, and you're advertising to your audience this massive, overt rug pull.
I just want to know why they funded $15 million against ivermectin research.
Right? And hydroxychloroquine. That's the other thing.
Like, did you see that Washington Post puff piece? Like,
all right, so
I saw the headline.
Interesting timing with all this. FTX starts like a couple months before the 2020 or the run up to the 2020 elections, and a couple months before this massive donation was made from Sam's mom's political PAC, whatever.
Some kind of bundling.
Yeah.
Like,
SBF becomes this wunderkind, like, mastermind a couple months after Jeffrey Epstein dies. This money is flowing. The ivermectin research, the fact that he's able to get on Capitol Hill, the fact that he's having closed door meetings with Gary Gensler.
Is Epstein dead?
We don't know. We don't know. I can't say.
You
for
said
sure.
that pretty concretely.
After he died, I should put air quotes around it. The Gary Gensler closed door meetings where they're literally talking about how to get what's their amnesty for breaking regulations. Like, they were literally
Regulatory capture to a fucking
date. The context of the meeting was like, all right, here's how we're going to give you amnesty.
We'll pass these rules, but you'll be forgiven for your transgressions.
Giselle Bankman Fried. It all stinks.
Epstein did not FTX himself.
So got
that in the live chat.
How do we capitalize on this?
Just stay humble and stack sats. Push forward. Help. Look, people are realizing the need for Bitcoin. People are realizing the need for self-custody. People are understanding the value prop. They understand the need. Millions of people are understanding the need. What do they need now? They need easy-to-use tools, easy-to-use self-sovereign tools, and they need education to go with it. We don't need to convince people that they need Bitcoin, that they need to use it in a self-sovereign way. They're coming to that conclusion to themselves. More and more people are going to get burned as the years go on. They will come to the conclusion themselves. We need to be ready for them when they do. You need to be ready with education. You need to be ready with tools. I know personally that I've failed some of my college friends, even though I was extremely annoying about self-custody, a lot of them still got wrecked, right? And your friends and your family should be the core target, right? The friends and family, when they need you, they will come to you. They're all coming to me now. They're all coming to me now. They're all listening now. And we need to help them through this.
Well, you're too hard on yourself. Because, yes, that does happen. It's happened. I mean, I definitely have friends and family who didn't heed.
So many people in Gemini Iron Man.
Didn't heed the warning. But I know you're getting it because I'm getting it too. DMs of people being like, thank you for putting the content out there, for really driving these messages home. Yeah. I got texts from two of my former colleagues at Barstool that like thanked me because one of them particularly was last year. It's funny, like, again, low time preference and staying, having integrity and just being consistent with messaging, like hold your keys, yield doesn't exist. Like one of them,
you are the yield,
wanted to put his whole stack into BlockFi to get yield. Yeah. And I like talked to him out of it and like explained the mechanisms of what was going to happen with BlockFi, like to a T. He wound up not doing it. He texted me last night. He was like, thank God. Like I would have lost a lot of money.
You should have wrote thank Marty.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just education. I mean, you guys, I found out about Unchained through you guys. Y'all were very early. It was like before the Vault product came about. But yeah, it's
noted. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. It was the when they were, launching Vault product, they had
to take credit for all of Michael's success. You're welcome.
We could talk about some other successes you've had, but, yeah, it's education and spending the time with individuals. It's important. And then like the other part is if you like Bitcoin only products. So if you're thinking about products or things you're interested in, you should really, we're still so early. Yeah.
Scratch your own itch, yeah. build things that you need, use the tools, learn and be humble enough to realize that none of us know everything, that we can constantly improve our understanding of all of these systems and these tools, improve your own situation, help others. And build things you need, right?
Yeah. It was funny to see your former employees at the Block.
Like, and we're going to fucking win.
Not your former employee, your former colleagues at the Block, like crying on Twitter, like, I can't believe this happened.
Yeah, you definitely had the best timeline out of everyone at the Block.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
can you give us some Block like inside stories?
I'm
not going to put you in a position to do that, but like,
you literally
I am,
just did.
I am, but.
No, I mean, I won't because I think the arc of history of where we're at today and the future will play out for everyone. And, you know, but I do think we're seeing it right now, right? Like people that were supposed to be the smartest people in the room, especially people, we can talk about the Block, people that are supposed to be providing education to corporations, enterprises on digital asset leading publication and directing them the right way. I mean, if you go on the website now, they're just like people are getting rugged left and right by these products that they're advertising to people that don't understand or don't know it. So, yeah, it's an interesting timeline to see, you know, everybody's smart until they're not.
Yes.
The whole meme of the smartest people in the room is just straight up bullshit.
It is.
The key to life success is not to be the smartest person in the room, is to be humble enough to realize you're not. All you have to do is just not be a complete dumbass. Stay humble and just show up every day.
It's a cycle.
Just keep pushing forward. All you have to do is keep pushing fucking forward.
The funny part is it's this like academic psyop because there's like so many of these like shit coins that were launched. Like Columbia always sticks in my head of like, I could never get into Columbia. I don't fucking know. But like, I think about something that Parker said is like, Bitcoin's not a IQ test. It's a common sense test. And so they just like create these, like I sent you in the similar with ETH, but FTX is like a waterfall of all the holding companies. And there's like 1,000. It's like only an autist that was going to lose everything could like construct something like that.
Yeah. No, it's
mental masturbation.
We've basically learned this lesson many times about the smartest people in the room. And I don't know, because I am somewhat of like a left side of the curve, like caveman to an extent. And I've always had that lingering doubt in the back of my head, like, oh, maybe these people are smarter than me. Maybe I'm missing out. But I think after the events of the last that have happened throughout this year, I think it's finally like ingrained in me, like, oh, these people aren't really that smart at all.
It's all bullshit.
Yeah.
It's literally all bullshit. Some people believe it. Some people are trying to scam people. But at the end of the day, it all goes to zero.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like we mentioned in the beginning of the episode, you still like you put these consistent messages out there, Bitcoin only, hold your keys, and everybody will flood your messages or your response, your replies, quote, retweet you. Look at this idiot. Like he's so wrong. Mac, the fucking maxi pad. Like all that shit.
And I still think there's going to be like, there's after all this bullshit clears, you know, next time Bitcoin pumps, there's going to be all this other bullshit that comes, whatever it is, you know, whatever the next gambling mechanism is.
I think this is the first cycle. I'm like, damn, I think the shitcoin.
People think that every cycle.
No, I think we've talked about this. I think like you get a couple years and we get the largest institutions coming in. And then they botch it again, but it's just the orders of magnitude bigger.
We're going to see like full countries get rugged shit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, exactly right. We've seen it get taken to another level with FTX. And that was one of the questions the Barstool guys asked me on Monday was, is this FTX blow up a systemic risk to the economy? And the answer is no, not yet. But you're beginning to see the tentacles eke into the traditional financial investment space with these pension funds being invested. No, this isn't a systemic risk to the economy right now, but it was a systemic, maybe not a systemic, but a considerable risk to the pension funds that invested in Celsius and Ontario, FTX.
The Ontario pension fund was in both. The Ontario teachers pension fund was in both.
Yeah, there's somebody just rugging them left and right up there. What are they doing?
Those poor Ontario teachers. They already live in Canada and then this.
Yeah. I mean, 2 9-figure bets that pension fund made just got wrote to zero.
But to that point on the financial like just blowups, the other thing that happened in the cycle was everything on the mining, like miner financing. It's like it took people to realize lending against a physical depreciating asset wasn't the smartest thing. That's
not only a physically depreciating asset, but like not only is it a depreciating, but like its fucking price is tied very tightly to the price of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like
that's sitting on
if the price goes down, you have accelerating depreciation. Learning a lot of lessons. What are we excited about?
What you just said, like all of those products should exist. You just need Bitcoiners to build them. I think what happened when you see a lot of this stuff is like only a Bitcoiner could understand why you don't want to rehypothecate a loan collateral or why you don't want to lend against in that LTV ratio for the ASIC. And maybe you want to like, there's a different way to structure it.
This was the first cycle really that we saw loans with ASICs as collateral. And it's the first cycle where we really saw these quote unquote yield products and both blew up.
Yeah.
Which would lead me to believe that we see less of both. And in either situation, if they do happen, they're going to hopefully happen in a more responsible way.
But the real
question is, what's the thing next cycle? The last cycle we had the ICO bullshit, right? That was pretty much what dominated everything. Then this cycle we had like the NFT. Well, we can go yield.
Let's go back through
we
the history.
Had ASIC loans. Like next cycle, it's going to be something we're not even contemplating right now.
Well, let's think about it.
It's going to be another scheme.
But it's like hard to imagine what they are. It's like we got to go even further back in the history, back to like Namecoin and Litecoin. Like the first shitcoin wave was like fair launch proof of work. Mining coins, where you meet on Bitcoin talks, maybe like I'm running this scripting algorithm. We're going to launch this fair launch on this day, no pre-mine with this scripting algorithm. Like, line up your ASICs to turn it on to acquire this coin, and they would market themselves, "Hey, Litecoin, I'm faster, cheaper than Bitcoin." Namecoin is like, "Oh, we're going to do DNS on the blockchain." And then you came the proof of stake, Purecoin. Purecoin was the first proof of stake, right?
It was one of the first ones. I don't know. There was a bunch of Blackcoin. Remember Blackcoin?
Yeah. Yeah. Purecoin. Yeah. So then you had the proof
of stake. Your favorite Vericoin was the hybrid.
Yeah. Vericoin was the hybrid. You had, so you had that proof of stake wave. Then we got into ICOs. Now we had DeFi.
Well, you also skipped. We had like the Havelock investments and then Mircea's exchange too, where like you could trade equity. Didn't use a blockchain. It was just like deposit Bitcoin and then buy this garbage equity from some anonymous person on the internet.
Yeah, people think
everyone got wrecked on that shit.
Mircea like accumulated close to 1 million Bitcoin doing that, apparently. The point I'm trying to
make. We're gonna see some crazy shit.
I don't know. The point I'm trying to like, I think the It's gonna be hard to eke out more scam. Like
no,
what? Like we can't. Like what?
That's just called, that's a, yeah, just called peak the top. Clown world
peak,
again.
Peak,
yeah.
Peak scam top. No yeah. way. No way. We got a while.
But
go.
What else? Like what would the new mechanism be?
That's the we. They haven't thought of it yet.
Yeah.
Oh, it's in the works.
I mean, NFTs. NFTs maybe.
Kyle Davies and Susie or somewhere.
Maybe that's the next cycle. Is like people are like, oh yeah, all the DeFi shit got wiped out. But there is something with NFTs. Like we need to figure that out.
Yeah, I could see something along those lines.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I know some people were doing NFT collateralized loans, but oh. It wasn't like at the kind of scale.
You look.
It just sounds horrible. Can you? I don't even know where to begin.
What, you don't think like a monkey JPEG is like a good collateral for a financial product?
So I don't know much about NFTs, but they were talking about, it was some, I don't know if it was Sundance, there was some like media access, the Grammys or something, and they had 10 NFTs that they had sold, and they were custodied at FTX. Like, oh my God, we can't get them off. How do we get our access? It was like for 10 years that you purchased this NFT. And they're like, no, we got you. We can make more. Like,
oh yeah, it was Live Nation.
Live Nation, it was somebody, but it's just the point of like an NFT in general. Like,
no, it was Coachella.
Yeah, Coachella.
Yeah, so you pay 10 years. No clothes, it's just
yeah.
obvious.
Yeah, he's like, no, we got you.
We'll just make new ones.
Yeah, they're like, they won't respond. Like FTX is like, no, just reach out to us.
We'll just make new ones. Yeah. Well, we're definitely going to see like, CBDC UBI schemes, like, and there's going to be like promoters, like, oh, these stupid Bitcoiners, like, I have my CBDC wallet, and they just deposit shitcoin into my wallet every week, and the Bitcoiners are missing out on this.
That's something I've always thought about.
We're definitely going to see that one.
Who owns the arb or the exchange between CBDC, Cutcoin, and Bitcoin? When
it's
going to
be all the
it.
Corrupt. The corrupt cabal is just going
to take a vig and like you get the CBDC, and then you're
there's going to be rent seekers throughout the whole thing. This is what. You know, this is what Matt Mazinkas talks about a lot. This is what Tom Luongo was talking about, is this idea that like the banks are already rent seekers in our current system. And when we move to this digital surveillance cuckbuck, like they're going to be rent seekers in that system as well. Like they're making sure that they're still going to be rent seekers in that system. And that's what I expect to happen, at least. Yeah.
We have Jeff Moss in the comments saying he likes the BAT token because Brave Browser is dope.
The BAT token's a shitcoin and is unnecessary.
Yes.
It's just a less successful Ponzi scheme than FTT.
Greed is one of the seven deadly sins, Jacqueline. It is.
Maybe security tokens.
Can we read Boostergrams?
Oh, yes. We do have a shout out as well. The Boostergrams were... Thank you, freaks. We were number one on Fountain's list this week. Oh, I've... airplane.
Yeah, we really appreciate it, freaks. Seeing the comments through Podcasting 2.0, seeing the sats stream into the node, seeing Rabbit Hole Recap and Citadel Dispatch and TFTC on the value for value leaderboards is just it's really rewarding. It's special, and I really do appreciate you all. So thank you.
Thank you. And we appreciate the freaks who contributed to Rabbit Hole Recap. RIP 226, FTX blows up, takes House of Cards with it. Top boost of the week from at Blockchain Bug, 100,820 sats. Marty and Matt, thank you for all that you do. At one point, I had huge bags of BNB and KCS. I don't even know what KCS is. And my whole stack in BlockFi to earn yield.
I have no idea what KCS is.
I remember.
Oh, maybe that's the KuCoin coin?
Maybe. I remember Matt passionately explaining how exchanges... tokens can go to zero at any time and your funds aren't safe on these exchanges as they can be frozen at any time. This shook me up and I put everything into Bitcoin and into my own custody and never looked back. I saved myself from getting destroyed with these exchanges, with these exchange blowups. Thanks to you too. Thank you.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it, freak. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Blockchain Boog. Eric99, Perennial.
It's Blockchain Boog.
Boog, Bug, Booger. No, it's like Booger.
Very different.
Eric99, 100,000 sats. Treat a centralized exchange like a filthy public toilet. Get in, do your business, and get out quickly, touching as little as possible. Stay humble, stack sats.
Very good advice.
From at BTC Nim, 55,555 sats, 55555. I'm an angry intern at the CIA. Marty is 100% correct in that we have orchestrated the entire FTX debacle to take Bitcoin down. That was phase 1 through 7. Now phase 8 is to break up Odell and Marty Jones and reward is currently the best signal in Bitcoin. Your bickering last week made the CIA operatives very happy. Once RHR is destroyed, Bitcoin will fail shortly thereafter. You two have the power to save Bitcoin. Please keep RHR together and the freaks will continue to thrive. 50,000 plus boost or go fuck yourself. Thank you. We're not going anywhere.
There's no shot whatsoever.
No. At God, this is at N0US3FOR F0R4N4M3. I mean, I think it's supposed to be Nostradamus. I can't even tell. Marty hasn't read the Mandibles because he's been too busy reading BitBoy Crypto's tweets. P.S. Marty, unblock me on Twitter. Total beta move, by the way. I don't know why I blocked you. Maybe you annoyed me. I got blocked by Nick Carter today.
Was that for him telling everybody that BlockFi deposits were safe?
Maybe.
And then they weren't?
I don't know why he blocked me. I haven't interacted with him on Twitter. Or outside of Twitter very, very much.
Oh, we got 6 at 50,000 sats or more. Yeah. Appreciate you, freaks.
At Pitar, 50,000 sats. No, sure. The dude who just had the previous reply to your boost with your Twitter handle. I'll look at it. Maybe I'll unblock you. At Pitar, 50,000 sats.
My block list is empty.
Marty, I love your imagination and parallel thinking. You keep our hearts filled with a cautious, curious hope. Matt, I love your clarity and sober reasoning. You keep our eyes on fixed. You keep our eyes fixed on the horizon through each laborious, victorious step. Thank you both. Thank you all. Thank you, Pitar.
Appreciate you.
This is we're not going anywhere. It's good yin and yang. We may disagree. We get into a tussle, a verbal tussle every once in a while, but we're brothers.
I haven't laughed in years as hard as I laughed last week. I had my wife watch because I knew it was coming, and she had no context, and she was dying just to.
Well, she's the best. So
it was. It was amazing. It was what needed. It needed to flush out what happened.
We'll find out will we find out what happened? I don't know.
I appreciate Matt. He keeps us grounded in you know, what the normies are thinking and that the world is all just, makes sense and that there's no evil.
I appreciate you guys. You keep it entertaining. Yeah?
Entertaining. You don't.
It's okay.
I think that's, just me personally doing a psychoanalysis of myself. I think the unknown really drives me crazy and allows me to
the beauty of Bitcoin. Bitcoin is truth in a post-truth world.
Yeah. The unknown really pisses me off. I need truth. I need integrity. I need to know how people are being fucked over. And when that's not clearly there and talking about incentives, all the involved parties and the incentives they have to be corrupt just pisses me off.
Yeah. Damn right.
Let's me go down these rabbit holes.
Let's read the shout out.
Let me get it.
We have our...
Are we going to keep going? Because I got to go to the restroom.
No, we have our event soon, so...
Had to turn my VPN on because the Bitcoin Commons still won't let me get to my BTC Pay server, so somebody please figure it out.
I love the Bitcoin Commons, but just a reminder that Bitcoin Park does not censor BTC Pay links.
Oh, it looks like we got a shout out while we're on air. We did. Not. Yeah, no, we did. Thank you, gentlemen, for being there week in and week out for all of the plebs. I appreciate the unapologetic way you both say how you feel, and it's refreshing. First, Marty, it's Bitcoin, not Bitcoins, and don't ever feel bad for having conspiracy theories. History is written by the winners, no one who tells the truth. Second, Matt, you honestly gave me the confidence to have self-custody and run my own node. It's all in steps, but it's steps we all need to start. Third, how do I orange pill a 60-year-old farmer who thinks digital currency is government controlled? And finally, what node software do you recommend? My Umbral is giving me issues the past few months. Thanks. Again, you guys are amazing. Stay humble. Stack sats. No name. Anonymous. Thank you, Anonymous, for the shout out. How do you orange pill a farmer 60 years old and thinks that Bitcoin is government controlled?
You don't have to orange pill them. Don't force it. Just plant the seed. Let them know you're there. When they're ready, they'll seek you out. You can't force anyone to use Bitcoin. If someone's not ready, they're not going to use it. I will say, though, I had the pleasure of working with a bunch of ranchers with the Beef Initiative, particularly in Colorado with Econo Alchemist. And he just gets up on stage. He goes, look, guys, you know, I'm not a rancher, but I know you guys, have been fucked by the state many times, and I've also been fucked by the state. And we can find common ground on that. And that was the common ground that he used. But, you know, look, ranchers, farmers are people that have lived with lots of personal responsibility for many years. They're people that have often been fucked by our corrupt systems. They are very close. You just have to let them know that Bitcoin is available to them. It is a tool that is available to them. And when they're ready, they'll come find you, and they'll start asking the real questions.
Yes. And to your second question, what node software your umbrella is giving you problems? I mean, if you want to go buy a cheap laptop, a Lenovo or something like that.
Yeah, if you want to pre-build, Start 9 is pretty solid.
Yeah.
If you want to build your own or convert your umbrella, I really like Raspi Blitz.
I'm going to put it's a really great needle.
Project.
Go to the restroom. You got to go.
Okay.
Well, we're going to wrap up. Just hold it.
Just
fucking hold it for 2 minutes.
Lower your fucking time preference, bro.
Piss yourself.
Talking about Neil. Neil's in the live chat. He missed his dog's vet appointment because he's been enjoying this rip.
Right. Take care of your dog, Neil. Speaking of Start 9, their pre-orders for their Purism computer go on sale now.
Their pro model is very powerful.
It's a bit more expensive, but
it's a lot more expensive. It's super high end. The other thing is, if the goal is on chain privacy, Ronin Dojo is a great project. I would actually say, don't try and this idea that like one box to rule them all isn't necessarily the most prudent option. Like I really like running multiple. Essentially home servers. You're running multiple home servers for different things. They're not that expensive. You can separate them. If you have reliability issues with one of them, it doesn't affect all your other things. So don't necessarily think that you need to have one, and experiment, play around with them, get familiar with the different projects. They all have different trade-offs.
Yeah, that's good advice. No, I remember going into Matt's apartment and, in Williamsburg.
Well, why don't you give us final thoughts and then go to the bathroom?
We have one more shout out. We're going to wrap it up.
We're going to win.
All right, we're going to win. See you.
Much love, brother. Thanks for joining us.
We'll see you in 2 minutes.
He really needs to pee.
And we got to wrap up here because we got to go. Second and last shout out of the week. Hey, guys, I just want to remind everyone that we are still running the fundraiser for the church to be able to provide a free summer camp next year.
Sweet.
We're also on Geyser now. Thanks, Matt. And between there and our BTC Pay page, we have raised close to 500,000 sats. The campaign is set to run through January 4th. Don't forget, donations are tax deductible. And information on how to get your tax receipt is on the fundraiser page. All donations are greatly appreciated. Once again, you can find us at www.creeksidesummercamp.com. www.creeksidesummercamp.com. Thanks again for all you guys do. Your friend, Hunter Biggs.
Yes,
sir. All right, guys, here's what I'm going to do now. He said they're around 500,000 sats. If we can get them to 2 million sats before next week's episode, I, Marty Bent, will admit once and for all that the plural of Bitcoin is Bitcoins.
No.
Is Bitcoin.
Thank you. Will you?
No.
It's for a good cause.
I mean, I'll say Bitcoin. Plural Bitcoin is Bitcoin, but I won't mean it.
You won't? You'll just lie?
Yeah. I'll lie.
You don't even care.
I'll lie for the kids. It's for the kids.
I just wanted to, so this is the freak who reached out and I set him up. I told him to use Voltage and BTC Pay Server. He did that. After that, I discovered this new project, Geyser.fund.
Mm-hmm.
And Geyser is really interesting because we've learned time and time again that people are more likely to donate if they have a social signal. If they're able to show a message or show like their profile picture or their name or something like that. And Geyser.fund has that all built in. So you have like kind of almost like a Patreon-esque kind of interface, but it all interacts with your own node. So, and they made it extremely easy to set up with Voltage. So if you have a Voltage node already set up, they tell you like it's very straightforward steps. You just like paste in the different line items. And then all of a sudden you have this nice page. Obviously that page is centralized. There's a little bit of trust based in, do they show the actual proper information to the donors, but ultimately the funds are all self-custody. You don't have that self-custody. You don't have that same kind of centralized third-party risk. And then ultimately, if for some reason, like, it really needs censorship resistance, they get pressured by a government or something, you can always fall back to just a regular BTC-based server interface.
Yeah. No,
pretty cool.
Yeah, Geyser Fund is really cool. Tallycoin is another one. I think Tallycoin you can run on your own node too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love Tallycoin. DJ Booth is great. The Geyser made it really easy to interact with your own node and basically just display the information. It just pulls the invoice for Lightning and for on-chain, doesn't reuse addresses. It's just like a really clean, easy setup UX interface.
Yeah.
Like we saw, I don't know how much has changed with Tallycoin since the Canadian trucker debacle, but with the Canadian trucker situation, for whatever reason, it was hard for them to
use XPubs.
Not reuse an address. So it all went to one address, and then that became a major censorship risk. Mm-hmm. With Geyser, like by default, if you do an on-chain payment, it automatically goes to a new address. If you do Lightning, it goes straight self-custody. It's just very clean. I would love to see more projects in this vein. I think ultimately at the end of the day, Bitcoin should be a massively important tool for people raising funds around the world, particularly for censorship resistant things. And we need that to be as easy as possible to do, particularly in adversarial environments, because that's where it really shines.
Yeah. Completely agree. Shout out to Geyser Fund. Shout out to Hunter Biggs.
We're going to win, freaks.
Website's escaping me and I closed my laptop. But
it's been great that we had Tanguma join us. It's been a long time coming. Freaks, we really do love you all. I plan to disagree with Marty vehemently on a lot of things till the day we die. But he will always be a brother. Shame on any of you who thought that there was a crisis of faith between the two of us. Yeah. We've disagreed many times in the past. We're going to disagree many times in the future, and that's what makes the show interesting. There's a lot of mutual respect there.
Yeah.
And
life's boring when you don't disagree with
people. Yeah, exactly. And just keep pushing forward. We are going to win. We are being vindicated. Unfortunately, a lot of people had to touch the stove. Unfortunately, a lot of people are hurting out there. Be kind. Definitely be kind to people. Don't be naive, though. But also, anyone who helped enable this can kindly go fuck themselves. And it's important that that is said loud, and that those people are accountable for their actions. This is a movement of personal responsibility, and that means if you act without integrity, if you don't explain trade-offs, if you enable these kind of behaviors, then that's on you as well.
Yeah, no, that's why I think we get derided for it when times are good and the shitcoin markets and everybody's getting rich and we sound like idiots that are a bunch of Luddites and just jealous because people are pumping coins and Bitcoin's staying slow and steady. But it is important as Bitcoiners to call these people out and protect retail investors and not even retail, like institutional investors as well, who got swept up into this from making terrible mistakes. The main one being allocating to these centralized shitcoins and the platforms they trade on, because they are scams at the end of the day. I'm not afraid to say that straightforwardly and directly to these people anyway. Where in the past, again, I have had that voice of doubt in my back of my head, like, oh, maybe we should just leave them alone. But no, I think considering the scale of the destruction that's playing out over the course of this year, these people are despicable. They're scumbags. They should be called out. They should be derided. They should not allowed to save face from this. Should not be allowed to save face from this.
And if you're in Austin, come to the Commons tonight to kick it with us for BitDevs. Consider joining us in Nashville December 8th for the Beef Initiative in Nashville at Bitcoin Park. You can find information there at bitcoinpark.co. It goes to the meetup page.
You can't shill Bitcoin Park at the Commons.
But you're gonna be there. We're like presenting at the Cattlemen's Association.
I'll be there too. Yeah, it's true. And Rod was here shilling Bitcoin Park at the Commons.
It's not a competition.
No. It's aggregate. You're back. Do you want to say anything before we leave?
Did you have final thoughts? Tanguma's back in the
He's got nothing.
We're going to win. Love your freaks. Stay humble. Stack sets.
Peace of love.
Dickie.